Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And?
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
The flag. And it starts right now.
What, Goldie? What? I see you leaning in. What?
Well, I'm looking at the Zoom window of the three of us.
Yeah.
And it's been so long since we haven't had a guest.
Yes.
That to me, this is like the children have gone to college and now we'll find out if we actually have a happy marriage.
Wait, I
heard him.
First joke of the day.
Do we have anything left to talk about? Is there any chemistry at all? Or have we just been like keeping up appearances for these guests?
We'll find out in a moment.
I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. Goldie, this morning, I had this whole thing planned where I was going to bait you into anger about talking about what kind of haircut I should get for my birthday that's coming up, because I feel like I have too much hair right now. But then my plans were derailed because, as we talked about a few weeks ago on this podcast, this morning I had a situation.
Oh.
So I'm back at my place, and not to get too into detail here, which I'm sure you all appreciate, but the last couple of days haven't been as productive as I would have liked them to be. And this morning was the South American landslide. So I'm waiting this thing out. It's all happening. And then there's kind of an end point. But I knew in the back of my mind, like, I know I'm not finished, but I have to come in because we have to do this podcast. So I walk.
At any point, are you buckling your legs back and forth like a baby deer trying to get purchase on the side of a
mountain
dry
goat.
Dirt hill?
Yeah. No, that was one of our friends at an old job we worked at who used to shit that way. You could see his feet scrambling under the door, and you're like, well, I guess he's in there. And he was subsequently fired for not flushing, right? I think somewhere.
That's right.
That's
aggressively.
Offense.
There was a closed door meeting where the executive producer of the show said to him, "We know it's you. We've like eliminated all the other factors. You are totally busted. You're a good enough writer. We somehow want to keep you. And all you need to do now is flush your shits." And then there were like four more unflushed shits. It's like, you're fired.
Yeah.
Legend.
He is a very funny monologue writer. I wish we could say his name, but we can't. So anyway, so today, you know, I realize I'm not quite finished, but I have to get here. I walk to work. I don't have a car here, and it's a little less than a mile. So it's usually like a very pleasant, easy walk where I listen to music and it's nothing.
Yeah.
So today, of course, like right around the halfway point of the walk, it's happening. You know, like I can feel, oh, I need to get to a bathroom. So
yeah.
I'm breathing like a woman in Lamaze class. Like I'm trying to like get here, as efficiently as I can. And I'm walking like a you know, as they describe Secretariat at the Belmont, like a tremendous machine. I'm walking, and I see a guy in front of me typical like white guy gym asshole, like guy clearly going to the gym in shorts, like the tank top tee, 30s white guy. And I remember like, oh, there's a gym in our office building. He must be kind of headed there. So, but I don't care. I just blow by this guy walking, you know, I kind of go around him and I get
wow,
this.
He must have been impressed.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. He was not so much impressed as, in my mind, pissed because he picked up his pace and he was trying to walk with me. And then we did, I reach there's a light where I have to stop and he kind of catches up to me. And then the light goes green and I'm off again. And he cannot keep up with me. Like, and so, and you know, I can tell where he's going. We're going to the same place and I just destroy him. And it reminds me of when you're in a car and somebody's trying to like pass you or fuck with you, but they don't know that you're listening to Van Halen and they have no chance to pass. Like there's no way you're passing me if I'm listening to Panama.
Right. Oh,
so yeah. Guys today, are so stupid.
I know. Today was, I was listening to Panama.
I wasn't, but that was the equivalent.
No, I turn off all music when I'm in a situation like that. Focus, got to get there.
There's a number of interesting puns here. Well, that's great to hear. Congratulations.
Yeah, very much.
The first is I want to go back to the Lamaze breathing because I did that with my wife when we had our first kid. Like when you have the first kid, you do all these things because you feel you're supposed to do them. But I'll tell you, there's nothing more useless in the moment than when the baby's actually coming. You know, your wife is being split in two by a new human being coming out of her genital area, and you're trying to instruct her how to breathe right. Like she would listen to you. You go, let me tell you how to take in some oxygen right now, the right way, okay?
No, in through the nose, Steph.
Yeah. Now, you're going to want to count to five, and I'm the expert here. I'm the one who really knows how to breathe during this because I went to a 45-minute lecture. So just, you know, if you can stop screaming long enough to listen to me, please, because I'm trying to help.
Please.
It brought back a visceral memory of that. But my second point is a question. Was this guy our age or younger?
Younger.
Yeah, like a...
He was in his 30s, definitely. And so he was peak physical condition, and he was no match for the Jewish shuffle today. I absolutely dusted
him. I kind of need to see video proof of this. Because
you're not
I wonder if occasionally you aggrandize your stories.
You come over here now. I bet he's still crying on the sidewalk. You can get video of him now. No, this guy.
Why wouldn't he just break into a light job? Like, no, it's just so you both knew you were doing this. And I mean, did you share a look?
Yeah, I'm saying again, in my mind, I put this on him that he wanted to walk faster than.
But of course, if he started walking faster and he noticed
did.
That,
he did. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But he could not.
Why wouldn't he just break into a light? If he had broken into a light jog, what would you have done?
No, I would have raised my hands in victory because that's him admitting defeat. You cannot beat me walking, and he couldn't. He could not
speed walking.
And I guess my final. It's not a question. It's sort of a topic, a branching topic. So the way I see the world, particularly in terms of shitting, is I am like a Terminator who's constantly evaluating if I need to shit in any environment. Like, what am I going to do? And I don't go anywhere without a game plan. Now, these include, you know, like hotels in the area, like hotel lobbies.
Barnes and Nobles.
Great use of Barnes and Noble's a good old place. Where I thought you were going was you put two and two together that this guy was going to a gym and I'll go into a gym.
Yes, I'll follow him into the gym. That's what I thought too.
No, well, because if I make it to the gym, I make it to the office. It's the same place.
All right.
So, like, I can't stop anywhere in between on this walk. It's all residential. So it's like I'm not going to go knocking on doors.
Now, how are you in a situation where there's four stalls? If there's someone already in there, does that impact what you're going to do and the ferocity with which you're going to do it?
Oh, it's a great question.
It wouldn't
Will you
have...
hold back to like 60%?
I couldn't have today.
Oh.
In most situations, yes, you'd be right. I'd be a little more reserved with the noises and the effort. But today it was, you know, unstoppable.
He's so,
now, what if you recognized a pair of shoes, and then would you feel that somehow that person had something over you for the rest of your life because they knew you had taken a shit?
Yeah. Is that how and it like, works?
This is how my mind works about it. Is I'm so meticulous about it and so mortified by my own body that like if I saw a pair of shoes, I knew I might go somewhere. Like I know every bathroom in every building I'm in.
Yeah, sure.
Of course. Yeah, I agree.
And I agree. Seeing a pair of shoes under there would have been bad. Seeing a pair of shoes I knew would have been worse. But I also knew that I'm getting into the office earlier than everyone, so it wasn't an issue.
Because I used to have in my glove compartment the IDs from every job where I'd ever worked. And I would know, like, a roadmap of I can go this place, I can go this place, I can go this place.
Yeah.
Stopping in at CBS Television Shitty.
Did that several times.
Yeah, I love that. Nice. Good move. Yeah. It's very centrally located. That's convenient. But today I had the, and you know this about our bathroom at work, so it's a pretty nice bathroom.
Fine. As far as those situations go, it's actually pretty
good. Yeah, it's pretty good. So they have, you know, the giant sort of handicap stall, but then they have the sort of handicap stall that's on the other side where it's like, it's a little bigger. It's got a handrails, but it's not the giant one. So that's the one I use.
You're just bracing.
You just learned you have Parkinson's.
Oh, no.
Well, that was my morning, Goldie. How was your morning?
I'm sure that everyone is thoroughly disgusted.
Yeah, no.
And is wondering, why do these three have a podcast?
But these number twos.
Well, in my mind, I sort of excuse JC from the vulgarity. She doesn't come in with that.
She's never taken a dump in her life. There's just a gloved hand that gently removes it like an egg.
Do you think that Olympic sprinters, it's a known tactic if you run, say the 100-meter dash, that you would get to the point just where you have to take a shit right before the race and that will help you?
Yes. God. That's brilliant.
Then we got to have Usain Bolt on here and ask him because
one interview question, that's it. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. We got to get to the bottom of that.
Literally.
Yeah. So I had an eventful morning. Goldie, how have you been? How have you been this morning?
I've been all right. I was, I had an emotional sneak attack last night.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I was so I'm out walking my dog, and it's the best thing for it's done the most for my Q rating in the neighborhood. That like I now talk to everybody, and everyone likes my dog. So
yeah, nice.
You know, by extension, they seemingly like me a little bit.
Thank you.
So I'm walking my dog, and I see this guy. He's got a dog. I stop. I'm talking. He's wearing this hat, this white hat. Kind of a canvas hat. It's very beat up, but I recognize it. And I say to him, is that a Tilly hat?
Ooh.
By any chance? Do you know what a Tilly hat is?
No, I don't.
So I don't know if you remember kind of in the 70s and 80s, there were certain products that had like a lore behind them, and you might only see them in a magazine, and the ad might be like a kind of well-drawn thing and with a lot of small print about the history of the product, and you would stop because there was no internet, there was nothing to do, and you would read about something. So the Tilly hat was one of these products. It was developed by this guy in Australia, I believe, and like their whole thing was like, this is an indestructible hat.
If
your hat is damaged for any reason, we'll send you a new hat for free, no questions asked. And they have, you know, in the ad, they would have details about an elephant has swallowed this hat and passed it through, and the owner continues to wear it.
So
my dad loved that and bought a Tilly hat and like proudly wore a Tilly hat and was an ambassador for the Tilly hat.
Right.
With everyone, would evangelize about the Tilly hat, was more passionate about the Tilly hat than he was about his two sons. I think if I had to isolate anything that he believed in, it was a Tilly hat. So I start saying to the guy, I'm like, you know, of course now I'm just babbling at this poor man who, you know, had the misfortune of choosing a hat, explaining to him what the hat meant to me. And, you know, my dad died over 10 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
And here come the tears.
Oh, while you're talking to him?
I say to him, I say, you know, I just really, want to thank you for the opportunity to talk about this hat. Like, getting like all worked up about this fucking Tilly hat. And it just, you know, it's just crazy. I don't know if anyone out there is dealing with grief of any sort or loss of any sort. That like it, you know, it's not that I think I'm over it in any way, but you just kind of are able to put the grief on the back burner. Yes. And not think about it and go about your daily life. And then you see something stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a fucking hat. And it unwinds everything. And you start going like, I wish, you know, my dad were here to see the hat.
Yeah, of course.
Who cares about the hat, you know? But I don't know. It's funny just to me. I don't have a larger point about it.
No, well, no, I think it's that so
how like, you know, we think we've buried our weapons in a John Wick like layer of concrete that we could only access if we smash.
Yeah.
Right.
And pull out our guns, but it's like, no, they're just out in the open.
They're right there.
Well, I was going
to
say,
have your back turned to them.
I think that with grief, I think it's amazing that you're able to still tap into it. Because, like, I think about historically for me, I think I've spoken about it. I lost like 3 of my best friends in a car accident when I was in my early 20s. And I can see in my 50s now the painstakingly like protective measures I've gone through to never go through that again. So I make connections with people, but I always keep some sort of distance because I'm so afraid of that grief and that pain.
Oh.
So I mean,
but when it bubbles up, does part of you go like,
it's happening right now, you know?
It feels so good in
a way. I mean,
just to know that something can be that important to me.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Yeah. I should be able, I mean, I have my very important connection to Stu, obviously. That is my treasure. And for me, I'm almost afraid to go deeper, you know, like with other people, because it's like, no way, I cannot handle the thought of losing other people. So
I'll just say to you that some element of it, just to know that I can care, to be aware of it, and to, because you numb yourself and you go, numbing isn't the same as not feeling, and numbing isn't the same as like reconciliation.
Yeah.
And it's not the same as doing well, so that when you know you're not numb in a way, it's like, oh, okay, I'm alive at least here.
Yeah.
You're totally right. You know, and this is something I was going to talk about a couple weeks ago. We can talk about at length another time, but I've started, in addition to therapy with my therapist, he's got me in this group therapy.
Oh, wow.
And it's actually been awesome. It's like an interactive therapy reality TV show is the way I describe it. It's like you're watching other people get therapized and you're kind of involved. But what, Goldie, what you just said, there was a woman in there who had an emotional response to something. She started crying. And then they went around and asked everyone how they felt about her episode. And I was like, because it's true. I said, you know, honestly, I was envious of it because you were able to tap into an emotion and ride with it in a way that I feel like I'm unable to do. So when I see you, Goldie, getting emotional about your dad's hat or whatever it is, or JC thinking about your friends, like I have this feeling of like envy and emotional distance. Of like, I can cry at like a Charmin ad, you know, on TV. But then when I think about the things that I should be crying about, there's just nothing there. I feel like a very blocked
culvert. You don't feel anger? You don't feel a replacement emotion?
No. It's almost scarily like nothing.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's, you know, as you get older, you'll see, you'll be 50 soon.
Yeah.
You kind of become aware, like, not you're on borrowed time, but that you're on limited time.
Yeah.
The clock is definitely running. And you go, is the point of my life to just avoid this discomfort and, you know, exist in some sort of pleasantness until I expire? Or is the point to go through all these things and maybe somehow by grappling with them, you get to a higher level? I don't know. But would the higher level even be as high as the artificial pleasantness that you can construct for yourself by avoiding it?
Right.
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer, but I would certainly like to try to plug in, which is why I'm doing all the therapy.
Can I ask what the group therapy is about? You don't have to share that if you don't want it.
What it's about?
Well, why you've entered into this.
Well, because honestly, I really, really like...
Is this like being a therapy all-star? That you've been selected for the way I, higher form of therapy.
That's the way I choose to look at it.
Traveling therapy squad. Yeah. We're going to go have therapy against other cities.
So, I did it because, and I would never naturally do this. Like, if this were presented to me, say, by Tal, I would be like, no. Right. But I'm in the regular therapy, and I really, really like my therapist, and I think he's been, helpful for me. And he suggested that I do this, that he's also runs this thing. So I figured, all right, this guy hasn't led me wrong yet. I'll just be open to it. I'll try it. And I've really enjoyed it so far. Actually, I have it later today.
Awesome.
So, it's kind of, it's been fascinating. And every once in a while, you feel like a little closer to what we were just talking about, like tapping into something real inside of you that gets scary and you instantly try to Lamaze it away.
I'm just going to put this into the podcast because there's a guest that I've been wanting to recruit, this woman, Nicole Sachs, who has a podcast.
I reached out to her, but I didn't hear back.
Oh, you didn't? Yeah. I'll reach out to her as well.
Cool.
Because her podcast is just all about this stuff, and she's so smart about how she talks about it and has such, meaningful things to say that, I'd love to give to our audience the benefit of her wisdom at some point.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. Well,
sounds like we can roll right
in to
Johnny Jokes. Whoa, bro. Here's Tragic Johnny's.
Oh boy. Okay. Bunch to choose from this week. I'll make all the wrong choices. All right, let's start with this one. My favorite topic, scientists. Scientists have discovered a frozen meteorite in Antarctica that contains some of the oldest material in the solar system. Yeah. Apparently the meteorite contains iron, bauxite, and today's monologue.
The same Phantom Pooper. His punchline would have been, and two Rolling Stones tickets.
That's great. Pooper. Yeah, that's right. The same Phantom Pooper. He would have written that 100%. That's great. Let's see. Okay. Well, more from the world of science. Geologists. Changing it up with geologists have concluded that the Earth's core has stopped rotating and may begin to move in reverse. Yeah. Experts believe it's all part of Tom Brady's plan to play another 20 years in the NFL. Going backwards.
Yeah.
Superman.
Yeah.
That's one that just, it's a joke. and then it's over.
That's right. Exactly.
You passed 20 seconds. That's 20 seconds in the show we don't have to worry about.
That's right. That's behind us.
It's gone.
It's officially checked as a joke. Yep. Well, the big game, speaking of football, the big game is coming up, and all the talk is about the ads. Yeah. Apparently, there will be a $100 million ad for Jesus Christ.
Whoa.
This is true, yeah. You know, just like he would have wanted. And finally.
A lot less effort in that one, you notice, and better.
Better, I know. It just comes easier. I should take a lesson from that. Embattled embarrassment, George Santos.
Oh, yeah.
Has informed his fellow Republicans that he will be stepping down from his committees because he just made the top 10 on this season's American Idol. Second Johnny, take it away.
All right. Well, a little sad news. Porn actor Ron Jeremy is demented, living in a mental hospital, and believes he's shooting a porno with the nurses.
Oh.
Yeah. As opposed to when he was sane and in mental hospitals filming pornos with the nurses. Okay. Russia has expanded its attacks in the Ukraine, threatening to draw in NATO and escalate to World War III. And 40% of Americans say if that happens, they're ready to take up arms and fight for Russia.
Got him.
Okay. New York City, has shattered a 50-year record for a snowless winter. And it's devastated city residents who find it romantic when the city is covered in a fresh layer of yellow.
That's pee-pee.
Yep, that's what happens. Pee-pee. Okay, facing more scandals over his lies, embattled Congressman George Santos says he's not going to resign. Santos says he's immune to pressure and determined to represent the voters who elected him president. We'll do a million jokes about this guy, none of them quite funny.
That's funny.
But we'll all get the word embattled.
Follow the same pattern. They'll all, and it's embattled. He said this, that he did this.
Yeah,
that wasn't what he said.
No, he's a liar, folks.
Yeah. And I'll do this one as a norm. I don't know. It's probably a Johnny, but I'll do it as a norm. A 26-year-old female police officer fired for having sex with multiple colleagues says she did it because she cracked under pressure. Well, everyone deserves a second chance, which is why I'd like to offer her a high-pressure job here.
That's another one in the book.
Nice. Yeah.
It's behind us. Yeah.
Not an easy week for me.
No, no. I mean, what with these, the Skippy hats or whatever it was.
Tilly.
No, Tilly hats.
Rude.
Tilly hats. Sorry. I'm sorry.
You know, what with that fucking little thing you had. You know what, my friend, you can shit in a Tilly hat.
Yes. And it will not break.
It's true, actually. It's probably a good plan for you.
Yeah,
a Tilly hat.
That's right. It's like your squatty potty. Yeah. Well, this week we have a very fun topic. Goldie, you thought of this last week, and tell the folks what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about writing for a show that you dislike. You're staffed on the show, you have a job, in your heart of hearts you don't like the show.
Yep.
Which is maybe a more luxurious problem that happened in a previous wave of more and better television jobs, so I acknowledge up top that people today might not have the luxury of being able to even have that feeling and to have feel they have choices.
Yeah.
It's like if you get a job, you just take that job because everything is 8 episodes and who knows. But, you know, this is something that I found myself in this position a few different times and I handled it wrong every time. So I want to talk about that. And then I want to talk about what I think are better ways to handle it and how you can both get into this situation or avoid the situation. And once you're in this situation, how to handle the situation, and maybe how to get out of the situation.
Right.
Situation.
So the first time this happened to me was I was writing for our good friend, Mr. Craig Kilborn, happy as a clam.
Yeah.
Nice. Loved my job. Never once looked at the clock. Three and a half years there.
Awesome. Agree.
Every day it was 5:30 before I knew it, and I was leaving and going like, can't wait to be here tomorrow.
Yep.
Amazing.
Then Craig just one day comes in and goes, just so you know, guys know, I'm leaving. consulting nobody. And we were in this weird position where because he surprised CBS, they were caught off guard and they didn't have a backup plan. And so they said, like, we're going to run through a bunch of guest hosts and kind of hold this sweepstakes.
Yeah.
Narrowing it down to five. Each of those five will get a week to host the show, and then there'll be a permanent host of the show, which is pretty unprecedented.
Yeah.
And I didn't mind being involved with that because you were writing for a different host every night, and I got to meet some very cool people. I worked with Bob Saget. I worked with Jason Alexander. Susan Sarandon hosted. Like, it was pretty cool.
Wow.
And then the finalists, it came down to, maybe there were four. I remember Michael Ian Black, Craig Ferguson, our good friend Damian Fahey, and D.L. Hughley.
I didn't know Damian was in that mix.
Damian was in. He hosted The Late Late Show for a week.
Wow.
And that was who I wanted to get it.
Cool, yeah.
Craig Ferguson got it. And then they were in a situation where he didn't really have writers he wanted to bring on. You know, it all happened very fast. And then they had to keep people on who just knew how to get a show on the air. And I was one of those people. So the then head writer, Mike Gibbons for Kilborn, saw, you know, what was happening and was like, I don't want to be a part of this. And had parlayed a better situation for himself. And he left, I think, kind of just as suddenly. So they promoted me to head writer. So obviously I'm going to take that promotion because I'm now like, you know, maybe 32 years old or something.
Yeah.
I'm head writer of a late night show and I'm going, this is everything I wanted. But from the moment I met him, it was clear that Craig Ferguson and I were not going to share a sense of humor, nor were we particularly going to see eye to eye. And I don't blame him because I was Kilborn's guy. Like, I had this great relationship with Kilborn. So why would you come in and go, oh, I'm sure this person who was allied with the last host is going to be my best friend here. And so I think he was a little bit surveying the situation to see what was going on.
And it sounds like he had voices in his ear telling him.
A guy named Peter LaSalle, who is this sort of vaunted executive producer. Now I'm getting deep in the weeds here, and this might be interesting to some people
love the weeds.
To some people, whatever. So Peter LaSalle was sort of a vaunted producer for Johnny Carson, who, when he left, David Letterman, because he was so blinded by Carson's aura, he wanted part of anything to do with Carson, brought him over to help him with the Letterman show for some reason. That then turned into, I'm sending you to California to do the Late Late Show. During the Kilborn years, he was there, but wasn't someone we consulted with on a daily basis. But he smartly, because he's a show business veteran, saw an opportunity in the chaos for him to assert himself and suddenly be like, I'm the Svengali of this. And clearly he realized, like, one thing I can do is just badmouth this guy to boost myself up. And maybe, and I'm sure he believed I was doing a bad job. And I probably was doing a bad job because I didn't like the show.
Right. Good point.
Yeah.
I did not like the sense of humor on the show. It was not what we had been doing on Kilborn. I didn't find it like particularly funny. That's not Craig Ferguson's fault.
Yeah. He deals in cheekiness, and that's not really your thing. Like, he deals in being the comedy of being adorable.
In retrospect, I was being a total snob. I came from stand-up. I had a bad attitude. I thought, here's what's funny, and if you're outside that, I don't find it funny. Today, I would go, none of this matters.
Right.
I have a job. I have a good job. It's my job to make the host look good.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to, like, kind of relax, meditate, find out what he likes, give him what he likes, build up a rapport, and once I have a rapport, I'll get in what I want to do.
Yes. Yeah.
Very important advice. That's not what I said.
Here's what I did. Got mad. I would stand at the podium every day and I'd have to laugh, which I found myself unable to do. So before the show, I'd get really drunk.
Oh, yes.
And I'd stand drunk at the podium and going like, everything he said. So I'm quickly fired within 3 weeks, which is Totally what should have happened. Totally what should have happened. But of course, I'm mad about it, right. Going like, can you believe this fucker just comes in and then I'm, you know, hell, I'm writing these awesome jokes and he fires. It's like, I'm not doing my job. So
That's a great story. Yeah. When you brought up this topic, it immediately, and I totally agree with you about Kilbourne. Like, loved all the time I spent there. Like, really fun to work for Craig, and, you know, just had a delightful time there. Then went out into the world of sitcoms, and I was lucky where my first sitcom job was run by Mike Scully. Oh, so wow. That yeah. was a blast. And that,
what
and
show
I
was
did.
That?
It was called The Pits.
Oh, right,
it was
right.
on Fox. It came and went pretty quickly, but I really did like the show and I loved the writing staff. Like, so that was, you know, I'm kind of two for two there. Then after that is where it started to, like, I started to get a real taste of, you know, things that maybe weren't to my taste, but I'm there anyway for the job. So my writing partner, Wellesley, and I got a job on the Roseanne cooking / talk show.
Oh, wow.
So this was a thing, and oh my God, talk about something that you didn't really like. They didn't know what it was.
Was that at 30 Rock? No.
No, it was in El Segundo.
Oh, okay.
The glamorous El Segundo. So we used to go to El Segundo on the King's Highway every day and just sit there and wait for them to, like, figure out what they wanted to do. It'd be like waiting around for Roseanne to come in, seeing what kind of mood she was in. She had, and I think still has, as our friend Ted Jessup used to describe him, her drifter boyfriend, like this guy who looked sort of like Sam Elliott in Roadhouse, who would kind of like shadow Roseanne and kind of whisper in her ear like, that sounds funny.
Jeff Galooly type.
Yeah, exactly. So this, it was like we were held hostage by sort of this drifter's whims and Roseanne's moods. And nothing would ever really work out. We'd always plan, like, today there's going to be a remote where Roseanne goes to a farmer's market. So, like, we have to write some jokes about her walking around. Of course, we don't know what's at the we can generally.
What are those avocados?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we're writing, what are those avocados in a room? And, like, Wellesley and I are looking at each other. And if you know Wellesley, one of his catchphrases is, what the fuck? And so, like, we would, every day I would get a healthy dose of what the fucks, and we don't know what we're doing. But after a certain point, like, and here's another way to deal with something you don't like, find it funny yes. how bad it is, which is, and again, Goldie, you were in a different position because you were all alone. So you're, you know, this head writer at a podium on a show that you don't really jive with, and that sucks. But I had Wellesley. So, like, we could always look at each other and just be like, dude, what the fuck is happening here? And of course, the show spun out of control. I think it aired twice and then was gone forever. But that's a good way, if you're writing on something that you don't like, find a way to find it funny.
And I'll expand on that. I think that's a great point, because I think you can also, at that point, realize you're collecting material for a workplace sitcom right. that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because all this inner office dynamics, all the weirdness, like, you know, someone drinking at work or
yeah.
someone, you know, handing a host a bunch of avocado jokes and then going yes. around and going, what the fuck? Like, that's all real and it's all funny. And so I think the advice, and I had this written down and you said it without saying it, which was like, try to reframe the situation into anything you can get out of it. And a sort of corollary of that theory is you can reach a point where you know you're not getting the satisfaction out of it that you came in for. Like most of us, my problem with Ferguson, I realized it really wasn't the comedy. It was something internal where I liked being the boss's favorite. I was Craig
course,
Kilbourne's
yeah.
favorite.
Yes.
I yeah. loved it. I felt good about myself. I had self-esteem from that.
Yep. Yeah.
I enjoyed our conversations. And Ferguson, I wasn't his favorite, so I was like an angry child. that was like, if he had just said, like, you're so funny, man, just show me what to do, I would have been like, he's the greatest guy in the world. Yeah, but of course it's, I'm like an egomaniac, and I'm like, he doesn't value what I do. Well, why would he? I'm not doing anything good for him. So, you know, you have to identify the problem. And I was able to make a little progress, because then the next things I worked for were a D.L. Hughley talk show and a David Spade talk show. And I wasn't those guys' favorite either, but I wasn't their least favorite. Like, I just had a good, cordial relationship with them.
Yeah.
Right.
Where I was able to, you know, kind of get some stuff on the show, but they definitely weren't turning to me as their go-to person. And that, you know, I had to learn that you can't be the go-to person on every show. Like, right. And what if you are, enjoy it, but that's an anomaly.
Yes.
Right.
That's a great point about yourself.
Work, you know, I've had a lot of other jobs outside of show business. Most of work is not good or fun or whatever. It's for money. So
Now
you're in the situation you were before you entered show business, which was like, hey, you're doing a job. But the thing I'd like to add here that kind of goes along the corollary to reframing it and trying to get something out of it, whether it's workplace sitcom, is what if you think of it this way? What if you think, I am right now getting paid a writer's salary to be in a master's program about television production.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's a good thought.
Yeah.
I realize there's so many things I don't know that people would kill to have access to. Like, you go, I want to learn what the director does of a talk show. Well, you work there.
Yeah.
So now you can just go to the director and say, hey, I'm interested in directing. Can you show me a little bit? Ask the cameraman. How do you decide? You know, how do you follow? And just start picking up details that you can bring somewhere else, you know, because I'll tell you what, the script coordinators on sitcoms know more about directing than the hotshot directors that come in, because they've been on 1,000 sets.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And the Gladwell theory.
Yeah. Like they know who's an idiot and who's smart and who's good or who's bad. And they, no one ever asks them their opinion on everyone treats them like the help all the time. So you can learn a lot by just being there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Forgetting that you hate it and
yes.
Instead say, like, look, I'm making a living and I have access to knowledge here that I can use. And that knowledge you can use, which leads into my next point, is
delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery. What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
You want to be always able to DB Cooper your way out of a situation.
Okay,
jump
explain.
Out of the back of the plane.
For those who don't know DB Cooper, he's sort of a 1970s icon where he came, he like robbed a bank, right?
Oh. Yeah,
he had where some, he got the money.
He had some amount of money that.
Yeah, that I think he robbed a bank for like four. He had robbed $400,000. He got on an airplane. They knew he was on the airplane. They were going to get him when he landed. And he asked them to open the door of the airplane, and he parachuted out into the Oregon forest, and no one saw him again.
No one's ever seen him.
Wow.
No one's ever seen him.
He might still be alive.
Wow. He might be a skeleton in a pine tree.
Yeah.
That's petrified.
Right.
From 50 years of exposure to the elements, or he might be hanging out with an amount of money that was nowhere near enough to last him.
Right.
But... And I've done a good job of this until right now in my career, is I've always been ready to go to another job. Like, you, if you have another script, if you have another, like, just don't let yourself be in a position where you can't leave because you're not ready to leave.
That's a great point, too.
You know, you should be using this time. Like, one thing I did when I was at Ferguson, was I knew I wanted to get into scripted, and I knew you guys who were in script. Like, I had some connections to get into sitcoms from late night, but I, right. you know, hadn't made the leap, and I didn't have a spec script. So what I did was I told myself, can't believe I did this. I said, I knew, like, I was like, you have to write a script. I couldn't get myself to write a script. So I would go on the floor underneath my desk, and I would say, you're not allowed to get up off the floor until you write 3 pages.
That's incredible.
And so I would hide under my desk. I wasn't allowed off the floor. And then within, you know, 10 days, I had 30 pages. And
what?
Then 15 days and 2 weeks, I Whatever had it takes, a script.
Right? That's
because
great.
I punished myself, you know. You would have been weird, bizarre S&M fashion.
I know. You would have been one of those self-flagellating monks.
Right.
Yeah. But then I had the script, and then, you know, I was able to reasonably ask of people, like, hey, can you, you know, and it didn't wind up happening then, but at least I then used the time where, you know, instead of working on the show I was working on, which I knew was a fruitless endeavor because they weren't using any of the shit I was doing anyway, that I was like, well, I could just write my own stuff because they're still paying me.
Yeah.
Right. That's
so
a great plan.
You can do that. It's not going to enhance your reputation, which brings me to another point.
Yeah.
Which is that, say you hate it, say you're miserable. Again, don't be like me. Don't be an asshole. Don't let everyone know you're miserable. If you can avoid it, don't, like, because no one likes hearing it. Like, don't call your agent and say, you have to give me, you're going to instantly be their least favorite client. No one likes to hear someone with a decent job complain.
Yes.
Even if you hate the decent job. So, and here's the other thing is, at every job you're at, you're auditioning for all the people who are staffed with you to show them what kind of coworker you are. Because if you get an offer somewhere else, or if you're close, the first thing that showrunner is going to do is call anyone they know on any show you work on and say, hey, I'm thinking of hiring this person. Are they good? Are they bad?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, what's the deal? And if you walked around like a fucking dickhead,
yeah,
that's going to come out.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, maybe a better approach is say, like, okay, I can't get the host on my side. That's a foregone conclusion. But who are the talented people here?
Yeah.
Is there a number two who's talented? Can I sort of make myself useful to them in any way so that I can get a good reputation with this person who's now a number two or a number three, who one day will be a number one, or who, if they're called, will vouch for me and say, hey, look, it was a shit show over there. But they, in this horrible environment, which is something I've said about people in the past and gotten them jobs, I feel. I said, like, look, that show was bad. We all knew it was bad.
Right.
But they kept moving their legs till the end. And so if they're on a good show, I can only imagine how good they'll be.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're 100% right about that. Like, in terms of just being, if the host doesn't find you funny, or the star doesn't find you funny, if other writers find you funny, that's invaluable. Just continue to try and do your best. And you're right. Nobody likes the guy who comes in every day and complains. Like, that just drags everybody down.
Yeah. Because people might be more advanced in their attitudes than you. And some people might not like the show, but they might have kids and they might go, like, I can't, like, I really need this to work out.
Yeah.
So stop coming in my office and bitching, because now I'm in a bad frame of mind.
Yep.
Yeah.
So 100%. For you to put that on other people is, you know, both bad in a sort of social sense, but it's in a selfish sense, it's bad as well, because you're not enhancing your reputation.
No. Now, JC, I'm curious, do you have any thoughts on this topic?
Yeah.
Like, is this something that you've encountered in your professional life as well?
Well, okay. I will say I may come from a different place, because for me, being a woman and a minority in the job that I do, I believed, and this may or may not be true, but because I believe in my skill and talent, whatever,
right.
I believed that I didn't have to settle for jobs that I didn't want.
Right.
But there was a job that I thought I wanted, and I didn't realize it was I was tour managing and mixing front of house for a band. I won't name the band; they're pretty big. And on my first tour with them, we did like this big MTV party and all this kind of stuff. And we had to fly across the country to play Kimmel.
Yeah.
And I was like, I realized I hate this music, and I had to sit there and mix the music. And right. What I did was I cranked the music so loud. I started like blowing the speakers at this party. You could see like the sparks going and like people were running and be like, what's fucking wrong with you? And I was like, what? It sounds great. And then we missed the flight to LA the next morning because I didn't care. This is like a total byproduct. Wow. I didn't
shocked to hear it.
Wait, what's the correlation between you not caring and missing the flight?
Because I didn't realize it that I didn't care until I realized when we missed the flight. It wasn't like I'm the kind of person who sets two alarms when I wake up, even for our podcast. You know, it's like when I care about something, I make sure everything is on point. But with this, I was like, I didn't even think about, oh, I got to get everybody ready to get on this, you know, be in the lobby at this point. We miss a flight. We're at the airport and I'm like, we miss a flight to Kimmel. Like I had no passion to help them.
And so what happened?
Well, she started crying. The singer started crying.
Oh, she. Like, okay, we're getting clues. Breadcrumbs. So was this garbage?
No, it wasn't. Okay. They weren't that big. They weren't as big. But at the time they were big. They had a big, big single. And sure. And she started crying and they basically fell for it and they got us on the next flight. We made Kimmel and then we got there and I'm just thinking like, I hate this job. And I basically, we got back and I just said, I don't think I ever want to be a tour manager / front of house person.
Do you ever have like do you think part of it, because this is what it was for me with Ferguson, was in the recesses of my mind, I was like, I should be hosting the show. Like, I don't actually believe that.
Yeah.
But I kind of believe that, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you think, was any part of it for you, I should be on stage?
Oh.
And I'm helping these people, and I feel like I'm more deserving in some way.
In this case, no. I mean, I feel like she's a star. She's always been, like, she's very talented, very, you know, it was an amazing band. I don't know. But in this case, no. And I've never been the type to actually believe in myself in that way, like as an artist. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be here. But
on this podcast.
No, God, I always do that.
You got your dig in.
I did. I mean, as an I love the podcast. Let's just clarify that. Oh my God. Anyway, I probably wouldn't. Well, I love audio. I love being an engineer, but I think that if I was like, yeah, I have it as an artist or whatever, I would have pursued it more. So in that case, I never felt that way when I was mixing or tour managing, but I prefer audio over being like the babysitter tour manager.
Well, yeah.
So in terms of the music world, I'm wondering, is what you do the equivalent of writing, in that Alec and I started out as stand-up comics, and then I went to 2 years of acting school, and it was kind of like, I'm going to be the one up front. But then I realized, oh, this isn't maybe going to work out for me, but there's this thing that's adjacent to that where I have a lot of the skills that I can make that happen. Is that sort of like how most people wind up in music production, is that they were performers themselves?
I think so. I will say, for me, my intention was always to pursue being an engineer. I mean, I had heard the Beastie Boys record.
Paul's Boutique
came out. I was completely obsessed with this record. And that was the reason why I wanted to become an engineer and a producer. So that was my intention, was always to go that route. And then on the way, I'd always been very musical. I'd played music, and I got a scholarship to Berkeley based off of my musical abilities. So I went to Berkeley for music, but really my intention was to be go into production and engineering. So
I'm so curious who this band is. I can't wait for the show to end so you can tell us off air. We're going to just, listeners know that we will know who it is when we're done with this program. I was just going to mention briefly that there was a show called The Ortegas.
Oh, yeah.
That I worked on. Mm-hmm. And it was run by Wally Wolodarski and Maya Forbes, who are very funny, nice people. They came out of the Simpsons world. Very, like, gifted, funny people. But the show was kind of a mess. It was based on a British show called The Cumars, and it was supposed to be a hybrid sitcom talk show.
And so it's already messy to begin with. But at that time, I was still a very junior writer. And the way Wally and Maya ran that room, they only kept counsel with the senior writers. So all day, every day, I played poker with the three Mexican writers on the show. We played all day, every day. I remember bringing checks in to work, like, here you go, Julio. That was his name, Julio Calderon. I'm like, here's your $800.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, it got, they knew a sucker when they saw one. So that was how I dealt with that show. So play poker if you want. but yeah, let's take a shift.
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk about because read this email, JC, because yes, we had a legit question from one of our friends.
This is from Elliot Pierce.
Oh, I went to high school with Elliot.
You did?
Hi, Elliot. How are you?
Hi,
nicest
Elliot.
Nicest guy. Love him.
The subject is NFL records/predictions. Alec and Goldie and JC, whatever happened with your NFL predictions? With only one game to go, is it close? Love the show. It makes my Monday morning, Elliot.
Yeah, Goldie, you can handle this one, but I thought it tied in nicely with our podcast from a few weeks ago about taking a knee.
Fucked up. Look, we kept forgetting to do it on air, but we were texting each other picks all season.
Yep.
And there was a time where I was ahead. There was a time where you were ahead. Then I was ahead. And then we were even. And we got down to the last week of the season, and both of us said, like, do you want to write 8 Johnny jokes? No. Do you? No. And so we said, can we just call a truce on this because we're tied and not do it?
Yep.
So,
were you hoping that people would just forget?
Kind of. No. And like, also, it was not that exciting to talk about podcast, like our picks. And we did that whole show that we had to throw out when we were talking about football. So right. I think there was a little trauma.
I think the Rams could be 7-9 this year.
Yeah, they've really got something going over
their
there.
QB situation is up in the air.
Yes, I'm wondering about Stafford's elbow.
If the line can stay good, perhaps they could make a wild card. Let's move on to a different team, the Seahawks.
I think you even asked wretched. Me. Yeah, you were like, do you care about this at all? Like, to me, and I was like, not even a little bit.
No,
and you're like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, but so Goldie summed it up perfectly. We found ourselves tied like right towards the end of the season, and I think we both saw an opportunity. Like, we both felt like we were going to lose the coin flip. And we would have to be stuck with the 8 jokes. So we were just like, let's call it a tie. We'll call it a push and move on. So, Elliot, that's what happened. We gave up. We took a knee.
Well, what if we did something different where you guys had to read jokes submitted by other people or something?
Well, yeah, let them submit them.
Maybe, but I don't know. Then we'd have to read them, and then
maybe you don't.
If people
have a
we knew submitted them, and they were like, "You didn't read my joke." And it's like, then you have to have this conversation where you go, "I didn't like your joke."
You don't have to use that tone of voice.
Or maybe you don't get a chance to read them. I just send them to you the morning of.
Oh well, believe
JC,
me.
JC, why don't
if
you
we
take
got
the
them,
jokes?
Yeah.
And you do a monologue for us.
Wait, can we take that back?
I love that suggestion.
I would be so bad, I think, at reading them.
I don't know. Let's try it some week, though. If people mail in jokes and you feel there's enough there for you to do a Johnny joke sesh, then let's do it.
Yeah.
Send it. What's the email address, Alec?
TypicalDisgustingDisplay@gmail.com. Send in those jokes for, title them Jokes for JC. And we'll see if we can cobble together a Carson monologue that's as terrible as the one you usually hear. Should be no mean feat. And now it's the part of the show we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Oh, yes. Listen to us sing. That's us, by the way. So this was my top 5 category this week. And to refresh your memory, the category is, other than family members, top 5 people you'd bring back to life.
Oh.
And this doesn't, it doesn't mean necessarily like just to have like dinner with them. It's just you want them here on Earth.
Shoot. I had this wrong. I had it as dinner with.
I don't know why you it's both different. Thought that, because Goldie asked me the same question.
It could be lunch.
Yeah, it could be a boozy brunch.
All right, I'll get.
Let's just say you have the option to bring him back to life and walk away, or you have the option to say, like, "Hey, what are you doing this afternoon? Do you have any plans?" Having just come back to life.
There you go. So, okay. So I'll just say my thought going into this was: these are just people I kind of wanted back in the world because I felt they had more to give. Okay. So number five, we talk about him every week. Norm.
Oh,
oh yeah.
Norm. Because even when he was still with us, you know, every other day there used to be some new clip of him doing something funny on his talk show or whatever. And it was just glorious. So Norm. Similar vein. Enjoyed him, Brody Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
Miss Brody, and wish I could get that, you know, once every other month call from him, him complaining about the state of the world. Very funny. Miss him. Number three. Here's where they get a little weird and different. Number three for me, Patrick Swayze.
Aw.
That's pretty good. I like it.
I fucking love Patrick Swayze. Aww, that guy gave us a lot of happiness. And he just seemed like very likable. And it was like he died way too soon. So
if I could be any person from any movie, I might be Swayze from Point Break.
Oh, sick. Yeah.
Totally. Oh, Bodie.
He's so cool. Bodie.
He's super
so fucking cool.
Super cool. Yeah, and that guy was always in the best shape. It was infuriating.
Yeah.
And had a great head of like early 90s hair. A great lion's mane. He looked like a lion. Number two, another strange choice because he did live quite a while. But boy, do I miss this guy. Jerry Orbach.
Oh,
I love
so
Law
good.
And Order so much.
Yeah. Oh,
he was so great on that show.
Are you watching that again or something?
I mean, I'm always kind of watching it. But yeah. And number one for me, I think a very funny guy who had a lot more to give and made me feel very happy, John Candy.
Oh, that's a great one.
Miss the Candy Man.
The Candy Man.
All right, that's my list. Goldie, you're up.
I went in like a totally different direction.
No problem.
Number five, I bring back to life Adolf Hitler. He goes, "I'm alive," and then I smash his head with a rock.
That's a good joke. Okay, I like that one.
I'm back. No, you're not. Bye.
Goodbye.
Maybe I even do that a few times.
Yeah, maybe it's all five.
Number four is just someone I've always been fascinated with, Leonardo da Vinci, given that he seemingly invented helicopters
a lot of things.
In the year 1400 or whatever.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
What a weirdo.
I would like to just see what he was like.
Yeah, same.
Number three, is she really that hot, Helen of Troy?
That's a good one.
Bring her back. See, like, hey, do you think you could be an influencer, or what are we gonna do with you?
Yeah,
do you measure up? Are we launching ships over this?
Yes. Right. But speaking of measuring up, I think she could at best be 4'6", so it would have been a little tough today. They were very short back then.
Number two, I get guitar lessons from Jimi Hendrix.
Ooh, sweet,
love it.
And number one, I guess, like, I'll go. I really didn't know, because I don't want to like put the weight of number one on this person because it makes it seem like I'm
it's just five people.
I really miss Robin Williams.
Oh
my God. You know what, Goldie? We have crossover.
Oh, crossover appeal. Well, Goldie, you have that such a sweet story with him where you've actually interacted with him a couple of times. So
and I just really like, you know, I know in comedy circles he fell out of vogue, but I always loved it.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's back in vogue now.
Ooh.
All right, JC, what do you got?
Okay, so I took this list sort of like people who could answer some questions. Like, what happened?
Yeah.
So my number five is Tupac Shakur.
Oh, good one.
So I actually went to high school with Tupac.
What?
Whoa. Yeah, how is this just coming out now? We're scrambling
to
fill episodes and all of a sudden.
So much content.
You went to prom with Tupac?
No, I went to high school.
Oh, okay.
Imagine.
No, I'm just trying to make it better.
No. We went to high school. I went to a pretty small high school also. And he was a very, very nice guy. And I'll just quick anecdote. We had to change the mascot of our high school, which was the Tamalpais Indians. And there was an assembly to change it from the Indians, because it's racist,
yep,
to the Red Tail Hawks. This is in the 80s, so we're very progressive in Mill Valley.
Right.
And he rapped about why we should change it during this assembly.
Wow.
And I remember looking over at my girlfriend and I going, he's pretty good.
You had an eye for talent even back then.
Yeah, which is, yeah. So anyway, that was my number five. My number four, Anthony Bourdain.
Sure. Feels like he's still here, though. They show all the specials all the time.
Yeah, I want to know, did he really? There's some, like, I don't know, talk about conspiracy theories. I don't know. Why would he kill himself? Anyway.
Yeah.
Number three.
Whoa, what are we saying?
I don't know. I feel like there's a slew of people that their deaths were deemed suicides, but I don't really believe it.
Yeah. Wow. And Robin Williams was one of those.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a suicide.
I mean, he was a very depressed individual. So
sure.
So number three, Prince.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one.
Number two, Robin Williams.
Yeah.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault. And number
I'm bringing you back, but no Southern preacher character.
Well, wait a minute.
And number one, maybe he knows who killed him. John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
That's
suicide.
Suicide. Right. Long distance, highly coordinated.
From 100 meters. Suicide. Those are great lists.
Yeah.
I even though you were like, oh, I didn't know, I did it wrong, you guys both had fantastic.
It's a good
lists.
Topic.
Yeah,
I didn't think, you know, it was a deceivingly good topic.
Yeah. Yes. And it wasn't songs, Goldie. It was not songs.
Right.
JC, what do we got next week?
Okay. I have two, but I'm going to choose one last second. If you hate it, we can go the other one. Top five sexiest cartoon characters.
Oh,
all right. I was
born to do this one.
Yeah.
Come on.
That one was a Stu suggested that a long time ago. So I'm like, you know,
that's
what?
A good
bust that one out.
Thank you, Stu. That's great.
Yes.
All right. Well, that was a fun top five. And now let's end the show as we always do on a high note. Tom and Max, and I want to tease Tom's return. Morty, I should say.
Ooh, yes.
He's been texting with me that he's antsy to come back. So we're excited to have Tom/Morty come back and give us the state.
I mean, where are we going to find the room for him? But okay.
That's true. Bump Seth Meyers. That's right. Well, we should talk about that now.
Yes.
I just said it.
Yes.
Next week, our guest is none other than Seth Meyers.
Wow.
We got him. I don't know how, but we got him, and we're going to talk to him. We're very excited and thankful that he is coming on to our little podcast that can't.
Yeah.
Seth Meyers will be on.
The little podcast that won't.
That won't, that didn't, that can't. I think I can't. All right. So my high note today is kind of a weird one. So we have a listener whose name is Brian Kenny. Mm-hmm. It's a complicated connection, but one of my wife's best friends from growing up, this is her ex-husband, and he and I are in contact on Instagram. He loves the podcast. He listens all the time. He's a huge music guy. He knows way more about music, certainly, than I do. But he sent me this little clip on Instagram that has changed, like, my week entirely. It's a show called Stairway to Stardom, and you can find it on YouTube. It was a public access talent show from the New York area in the early 80s to like 1990, and it has everything you want, just like a ridiculous old Italian guy host who only is doing the show so he can sing at the beginning. And he has like a very pronounced, what I like to call a lateral L when he pronounces things. So like when someone will sing, he'll come up and be like, wasn't that just lovely, folks? Did you like those lovely lyrics? You know, and like, so I'm dying, and it's all the shit you want. It's bad video, bad audio, tiny audience, bare sets, 10-year-old girls who can't dance doing a dance routine to like Fame or Flash Dance. It's got everything. So Brian Kenny, thank you for Stairway to Stardom.
That's so good. That's great. Was Diana de Guacamo there?
Yeah. She could have been.
I'll go, Goldie.
Okay.
My high note is this week I posted a story about some old, like, We Are the World clip that, because I just love them. And I got a response from our producer, one of our producers on Family Guy, Kim Furtman, found out that she performed at Live Aid. We Are the World on stage at Live Aid. And wow. She sent me video, and there's video of her on stage singing, let me say it again, at Live Aid, We Are the World. This was the, I mean, talk about a high note.
Unbelievable.
You didn't know. Yeah. I thought for
Way
sure.
Way to go, Kim.
Yes.
I knew she was in Annie when she was younger, but that's amazing.
Yeah, that's
Way to go, Kim Furtman. Yes.
So good.
Well, mine's going to seem especially good after that.
Yeah.
We all know I'm a big fan of Back to Zero, which is just all you want to do is get back to where you were when you didn't think you were that happy, but in comparison, you were.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just had the weirdest itch between two of my toes. It was excruciating for a couple days, and then it just finally seems to have gone away.
Wow.
What a high note.
I'm just so happy to be back to zero.
Back to zero.
Without a crippling foot itch.
Did you use tough actin to nap?
I was going to say.
No, I used some foot balm and,
and a pencil.
Yeah. Oh. Well,
if we want to get technical, I think I might have had a small blister in between two toes that popped. I just didn't
My God.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen. Well, I'm so glad that you're back to zero.
Thank you.
I'm happy about Kim Furtman singing in Live Aid, which is incredible. I'm so pleased to be watching Stairway to Stardom, which is
the
theme song. Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely going to love it. And I want to thank all of you out there for listening this week. And if you're in a job that you don't like, maybe you could take some of those tips we talked about today that were very useful. And I want to thank you two for always being awesome.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again next week.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
All right.
Yeah.
One of those avocados.